The new owners of the Pawtucket Red Sox emerged shortly after the new year as a group of savvy business leaders who were going to do Rhode Island a favor by keeping the top farm team for the Boston Red Sox in the Ocean State. The plan was to build a gleaming new stadium on reborn downtown waterfront of the state capital, land that was once shut off to development because Interstate 195 sliced through it. Among the new owners were familiar Rhode Island natives and business mavens, people like banker Terry Murray, CVS chief Tom Ryan, and lawyer Jim Skeffington. It's never polite or even fair to speak ill of the dead. Yet from the start, the public face of this deal was the late Skeffington, who died while jogging at the age of 73. It was his dream to bring minor league baseball to his hometown, Providence. He ushered reporters and community leaders around the site. The public relations rollout was a disaster. Skeffington's strategy was to get all the elites on board, beginning with then-Governor-elect Gina Raimondo. A master power broker during his prime, Skeffington was a big player in many public projects over the years, including the Rhode Island Convention Center and the Providence Place Mall. In days of yore, squeezing the support of political leaders, bankers, and business and labor was enough to push through just about anything in our insular political culture. Times have changed. Skeffington unveiled his opening request: free land for the stadium, relief from Providence property taxes, and a taxpayer subsidy of $120 million over 30 years. All this in a state still reeling from then-Governor Donald Carcieri's 38 Studios fiasco, which has taxpayers still on the hook for millions in state promises to a failed video game company. It's easy to say Rhode Islanders ought to grow up and put this behind us. That's difficult when each week brings the water-torture drip of new media revelations about the deal. Fleece me once, shame on you. Now taxpayers and voters seem to be saying, fleece me twice, shame on me. Political support, never robust, seems to be melting away faster than summer. Raimondo has muted her comments in support of the deal. So has Providence Mayor Jorge Elorza. That's no surprise. They both owe their election in some measure to the city's wealthy east side, where bumpers on Thayer Street are sprouting no new stadium stickers faster than Bernie 2016 signs. Okay, so the view from the State House is that the House Speaker is the most powerful poll in Rhode Island. That's true, but there's a limit to any speaker's authority. He, there's never been a she, can't do anything without the support of his members. Speaker Nick Mauiello was an early booster, but he too has backed away. The reason? His members don't support it. House Republican leader Brian Newberry from North Smithfield says bluntly that he hasn't met a constituent who is not allied with the building trades unions who backs the Providence Stadium. No Democrat has organized a pro-stadium caucus. What's more, the Providence nonprofit elites are wary. Brown University President Christina Paxson was an op-ed page supporter early on. Now Brown wants $10 million for a small strip of land that would be left field, raising even more questions about the viability of the project. Providence Preservation Society has also announced opposition, and many Providence residents want to see a public park on the stadium land. That sounds great, but where does cash-strapped City Hall get the money for park upkeep? A stroll through the jewel that is Roger Williams Park shows years of neglect. Ditto for such downtown open spaces as Kennedy Plaza and Burnside Park, where cleanup efforts are underway. Yet if General Burnside dismounted his brown horse today, he'd be in danger of stepping on a hypodermic needle. There is still a dwindling window of opportunity for the new owners to negotiate a new deal that takes taxpayers off the hook, but not much. The new stadium vision may not be dead, but it's on life support.